1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Test 1.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Test B, test B, test B. Test B, test B, test B.
I've noticed increased activity among legislators gathering in Portland, gathering in Eugene, wherever they're gathering. All I consider that all as a good sign. I said some time ago that they know there's a need. They've been home, they've talked to the constituents. They said, you know, how can you expect to get a conclusion out of this? I said, the pressure isn't going to come from me, it's going to come from their constituents. And so their meetings, their interest is a good sign that they know something needs to be done and they're trying to work at it. Governor, so I've considered that all good.
Governor, do you think there's some question whether there is a majority thought in Oregon, whether we are not just a state of pluralities when it comes to property tax relief? Schools want more money, they don't want a spending limit, certainly, and businesses want to shift taxes, you know, people want to push it away from their own area of concern. Do you think there is a majority thought that can be followed by legislators in exerting leadership?
Yes. And you pinpointed it, and correctly, that part of the problem in the legislative body is that there isn't really a consensus out there. There's all kinds of thinking on that subject. That, however, has been and always will be true in regard to any tax matter. No one likes to talk about it. It's not a pleasant subject. It's not something we want to do. And so you rarely find anybody that's going to rush headlong and embrace something that's going to cost them more money. Nonetheless, you used also another important word. There is a sense of leadership that has to take place, saying, yes, we know all of you out there are not exactly enamored with all of this, but in our view, this is what we believe should happen. And that's where the real guts, courage, and leadership has to come from.
Are you going to provide that leadership? What proposal are you going to submit on Monday?
Not going to change from what I'd said before. Nothing's changed. I'm going to make the recommendation of what I proposed, part of which started in 1979 and rejected by the legislature, I think most tragically rejected by them. And added to it the super hard this session, and I will start with that.
What's your feeling about the so-called menu ballot that some of the Democratic leaders are suggesting that they may want to go with?
Let me tell you that when we sit down Monday morning at 9 o'clock, everything is on the table. I'd said that before, but I want to restate it. Everything. Anybody's idea of how we ought to approach it, and we'll spend time going through all of those. And that's how we will be able to arrive at a consensus. Well, this is good, this is not good, maybe we shouldn't do that, whatever it is. And so I would hope that all the ideas are on the table, including the menu. And I'm not going to take I'm not going to tell you now this is it or isn't it, because we haven't started our discussion yet. Again, separate in your mind the differences between what my requirements are and sales tax, menu, all the rest. Two different issues. One is legislation now, and the other is referral to the people later. And both of them will be discussed.
What is the timeline for the special session? Is there a time beyond which you would not be feasible?
I don't want to put any deadline on that now. I said that I'm willing. You understand, when I tell you that I'm willing to call a special session, even without a consensus, I certainly understand the impact of that. I don't want that. I would try to avoid it, but I'm not going to put a timeline on it. I believe that we won't get to that point in time, but I'm not going to put a time on it. We'll just see till it gets to a point where, you know, after discussions, that nothing comes of it, then I'll do it.
Whether or not we'll have one next month,
I think the odds are pretty good next month, but that's the best I can tell you. I have as I've told you before, a timetable of I'd like to get something done by September 15th, although I also said, you know, I don't know if I can hit that date, but I think September odds on favorite for that to
is
occur.
Is it possible you might call two or three sessions if they can't agree?
Yes, but you see, you're talking about the scenarios I don't even want to think about, because can you imagine how terrible it would be for the legislature to get together without consensus once, let alone two or three times? So, yes, those are all possibilities.
Along with immediate property tax relief, do you still want a sales tax submitted to the voters?
I believe it makes good sense that it takes place, and I've advocated that for some time. I think that, just to simply put it, that if that question isn't resolved now, it'll be back next session, and if it isn't resolved next session, it'll be back the session after that. So my contention is there's a strong interest in it now, and it's appropriate time to set it out for a submittal, yes.
Governor, is there anything new under the subject property tax relief, or are we just merely looking for consensus?
Well, I can't say there's nothing new, but it isn't likely that it's anything new. Over the years I've been here, I've just heard about every idea that you can think of. That I even heard of an idea one time that I never did even understand, and the person wrote a book on the subject, and I read the book and didn't understand it. But I keep listening. Is there a germ of something here that we haven't tried, or can we expand on that, or is there a little bit of a good idea there that looks good? I would hope that there's something new under the sun, but I sure haven't heard it in 24 years.
Do you have any reason to believe right now that there's been any movement among legislators either way in coming up with some kind of compromise?
Well, there's only move in the sense that they're looking at it to see what might happen. That's movement. Talking about it is movement. And as to whether their movement in terms of one direction, no, not yet. But I'm really encouraged by the meetings that I've read about. I'm encouraged that they're talking about it. That's good.
Changing the subject just a little bit right now. You know, recently now your economic development director has resigned, the general services director has resigned, and now Greg Smith with the housing division. Do these resignations worry you as far as what's going to happen with the departments of the state?
No. That's the very nature of it. If you go back, you put a scenario together, but go back to all of them. The economic development director had said initially this was not his life's work, and he wanted to get back to private enterprise, and he'd been having some offers, and he left. General services, Darrell Rawls, he really didn't want to leave, but he had a family business that really needed his attention. As a matter of fact, he expressed the hope that he'd come back someday. Who was the other one?
Smith.
Greg Smith, same thing. Greg, clearly, I know Greg's been interested in going into private enterprise on his own. So those are the reasons. But that's the natural thing that happens. Actually, I've said so many times that my directors of state government are people, and I'm not talking to chambers or business groups. These are the kind of people you would like to hire. And so I'm saying to you, that's the quality of people we have. And maybe I should be proud of the fact that these things are taking place.
But still, you're losing those quality people, and that means somebody new or...
Well, but you understand, we selected them initially. Well, I didn't select Greg. He was here. He came here. But I selected those quality people, and I'm hopeful that I can do the same thing again.
Governor, are you expecting to have a strike on your hands with the state workers on Monday?
I'll be frank and tell you that I think... It's fairly certain there'll be a strike vote. That's not your question. Will there be a strike? I think that's less certain. But what the union wants, of course, is the authority to strike, and they'll have that behind them and feel that it brings a little more pressure to bear on negotiations.
What is the status of the negotiations now?
Still talking. It's been reported that some of the lesser items have been agreed to. As long as they're talking, that's fine. I don't want a strike, and I watched their program, and they don't want a strike, but it could happen, and we're working to prevent it, and I think they are also.
Governor, what would be the effect of a strike?
Well, it's going to range. I don't know whether it would say major inconvenience or whatever term you want to use. They will if I understand correctly, will not strike all of state government. They will strike some parts of state government, and that may rotate a little bit. I don't know. And we will see that essential services take place, but then that would mean there would be some services that would be delayed, so it could be a major inconvenience for some people, but essential services will continue.
The state has some kind of priority plan drawn up?
We have a plan, but it's difficult for us to be planned with precision until we know where they plan to strike. But we do have plans. Our agency has been notified as to the state's legal rights as well as the public employees' legal rights. And I've said in our staff meetings that that's, you know, in the event of a strike, I want to make sure that my state agency heads know that is the legal right under the law for the public employees to do strike, and that they should not be there shouldn't be any hard feelings or strong things over the fact that they're doing what they can legally do. But we will also follow our legal rights. And I think it's important, and I think the public employees would agree, that the essential services must continue. This isn't going to happen, but, you know, if we're dealing with school for the blind or deaf and the youngsters are there, you know, you have to take care of them and make sure that they are there and well taken care of. We may not give them educational training to the quality that they should have, or Fairview or Children's Services. You know, you pick them, and there's certain things that have to be done, and we'll do those things that have to be done.
Do you think that the state workers should have the option of being able to negotiate when it comes to contracting out work?
I'm not going to answer the question only because that is a subject before the bargaining teams, and I really don't want to insert myself into that process. That's an item for bargaining at the present time. And I have an opinion on it, but I don't think it's appropriate I should answer your question.
Governor, are you bumping?
Excuse me a second.
Last week you said you disapproved of bumping.
I said it was bad personnel management, and I still believe that. But that's from my viewpoint. It's bad in the sense both for the public as well as for the public employees, but that's just my opinion. I really don't want to get into it. Right now they're getting into the major issues, and I just don't think it's appropriate now for me to say too much.
Governor, are you close to appointing your economic development director or your water resources director?
We're closer in the range of the economic development director. And I didn't talk with them, Jerry, my executive assistant did, and what their plan is they began to narrow the list down, and they have some that they would like to develop more information on and even possibly interview, and that's the stage of that one. On the Water Resources Director, we're still just going through a set of names, and I narrowed the list down in terms of names that I had, however, that's as far as that's gone.
You got any forecasts about how long that might take?
No, just as soon as possible. I'm just as anxious as the agencies are. I'm quite anxious on the economic development side to move forward on some of the legislation that was passed this last time. Among them, for example, the Foreign Office, to begin to find out where we would want to do that and how we might want to get it done. The sooner we get that one going, the better. The marketing programs, we're moving tourism over, make sure that's well settled in there. You know, the things that need to be done. So I'm anxious to get that done. Water resources legislation has been passed, which I signed, that gives some major projects to water resources. And the sooner we get at it, the more likely we are to complete it. There's two required basin studies, as you know, and one of the pieces of legislation. The other is the coordinated agency effort to help in basin studies. And I'm anxious to move forward on those things.
Governor, speaking of water, one of your stated goals of your second administration was to preserve the Columbia Gorge.
Yes.
What is the status of the talks between Oregon and Washington? There's been some speculation that you're a little displeased about the direction those talks are going in, or have been in.
Well, I can't respond to the rumor or the fact that there's some displeasure, because first of all,
I didn't know any talks. We've concluded our efforts, and we've sent the bill back to Congress, and it's going to be sponsored by all of the Oregon and Washington congressional delegations except Senator Packwood and Representative Benny Smith, and that's moving.
I guess what I'm asking is, do you have any second thoughts then about any of the elements in that?
No, I don't. I think it's a good package, and I think it's one that will preserve the gorge, and we'll get something done, and I'm most anxious to get it done. I'm very pleased with the result of that work.
You haven't been in contact with Senator Packwood's office?
Well, yes. When I smile, I've been trying to get a hold of Senator Packwood. Was here to talk about it, and just this morning he called on the phone. But that's a little difficult to have that kind of a conversation on the telephone while he's on vacation, and I sense the need to relax and take it easy. And I said, Bob, let me get back to you and we'll spend a little more time at it. And he said, sure, let's do that. So that's where we are now.
Is it still about the fact that, if I understand, Packwood is wanting federal control and you're looking for a joint Oregon-Washington controlled status?
That's correct, yeah.
Governor, in regard to the Banking Commission, do you have any reaction to the criticism of the Oregonians today that your office and the banking commissioners, or in the bank superintendent's office, have been less than aggressive in insisting on close and aggressive regulation of the banking industry?
I suppose it's a matter of degree. I would say that there has been aggressiveness on the part of the banking superintendent of banks. There has been quite a bit of action, and incidentally, in our report, the director of the Department of Commerce report had showed the number of times in which there had been comments in regard to directors as well as officers and the changes that had taken place. It was an accumulation without identification. I am not offended by the aggressiveness of the Oregonian in regard to as they view it. They are effectively saying it could be better. And I would say to you that almost anything in state government or the Oregonian or business can be better. And so I'm not offended by that. We do not take the charges lightly. And the director of the Department of Commerce had made some recommendations, numerous, as a matter of fact, recommendations of things that should take place, which will improve the process. And I think that's good.
Are you comfortable with the status of the unemployment benefits fund, insurance fund, considering that the unemployment rate is going back up?
Yes. It's really stood a tremendous stress, realizing that last year we were 12.5%. And that shows, I think, the value of the reserve fund being built up. It was designed to withstand a terrible test, and it really did stand the test. I don't think we're going back to 12.5%. And so you have to say, where's the unemployment going to go, and how much money do we have in it? You look at two things, not only unemployment, but employment, because that means that's the money being paid in for those. And right now, yes, I'm satisfied that its integrity is still there. It will take care of those who are unemployed. Well, I hadn't thought to that extent, but I think that the fund is there that will take care of those who may be unemployed, which is really what the unemployed would be concerned about.
Governor, this being the marijuana harvest season, past eradication efforts have not proved very successful in the state. Is there an answer? Is there something different the state or the federal government should be doing? Or should they be doing anything at all?
I think they should be. No, they should be. No, I'm not on that side of the issue.
yes, we should be doing something about it, and as aggressively as we can. The state police, along with, I know, in the main county sheriffs, and occasionally city police, have been really working on it. It's one of those things like really climbing straight uphill. It's a tough thing to try to stay ahead of. But they've been reasonably successful. We've lost two law enforcement, one state policeman and one county sheriff, and down in southern Oregon, flying over trying to find where these fields might be. There's always something more, but you always measure it against, how much more is the effort worth. We plan to keep the pressure on. I do not believe that Oregon should be known as a marijuana-growing state. I don't happen to believe in it myself, personally. We have to follow the laws. I'm giving you my personal views. And so it's my intent that the state police, county sheriff, city police, and the federal government should all work together actively to inhibit the growth of marijuana. Recently, the superintendent of the state police was in a meeting down in California, and the whole design was of cooperative efforts between all branches of law enforcement, from the federal down to the local level. And they're beginning to work and communicate with each other. I think it's communication working together.
What would be your reaction if the DEA announced plans to spray paraquat on federal land in Oregon?
I'm not really offended by that, but I must tell you that I really have to get a better understanding of any danger to public health. They tell me just by reading the papers that they camp to make sure that no one's going to go in and cut that marijuana down and smoke it right after it's been sprayed. By reading again the paper that it's biodegradable, it goes away, doesn't linger. It doesn't have been proven harmful to health. But, you asked me quickly. I really want to get into it more carefully and satisfy myself that it's not a danger.
You wouldn't necessarily oppose it.
Not just offhand oppose it, but I certainly would want to find out more about it.
The Attorney General seems ready to fight paraquat if it comes to that.
Okay.
Well, I'm asking, is that an area that you two have to consult on?
Yeah, we will. We will. That'll be part of my discussion. Let me say to you something, and this gives me a chance to restate something. I'd made up my mind a long time ago, before I became governor of the state, after I was elected, that the decisions I was going to make was going to be based on facts and not emotion, nor politics. And I remain there. If any of the pesticides or insecticides in this case are harmful, I would fight to prevent them from happening. If, on the other hand, I felt that they were not harmful, then I wasn't going to be persuaded by political pressure or emotion. I'm going to come where the facts take me. And if the facts take me, where they take me says no, that's where I'm going to be. No. If they say yes, that's where I'm going to be. Yes.
Governor, forgive me if this has been asked before, but are you satisfied with the job the EPA is doing in regards to the Five Rivers Valley? The confusion that has arisen?
I'm satisfied with the report that was given to me. I'm satisfied with the concern of EPA and the Region 10 director. I'm satisfied with the process that they're going to follow in trying to put our concerns to rest. I'm not satisfied with the fact that this event came to this point in time through the EPA. It's very difficult for me, however, to criticize the Ms. Barnes or the new director of EPA for actions or inactions taken by others. What I need to see is what they're doing about something somebody else did. And I think they were moving very aggressively into it. And I can tell you, just from my own personal conversations, that they are concerned about what happened. The embarrassment is theirs, the new director of EPA, as well as Ms. Barnes. However, the embarrassment was caused by somebody else. And I had a good conversation, and I said, look, I don't consider it a sin to say, look, that was wrong, we did what happened wasn't right, and if it was a mistake, you admit it to be that.
and try to correct it. And so the process that they explained to me, I'm satisfied with, yes. And I'm satisfied Oregon will get its answer.
On another environmental issue, have you had time since the session to look into what I believe you called an examination or investigation task force on fish ranching? You said you wanted to initiate something
yes.
during the interim. Have you had any time to get
no.
that going?
No, I haven't started that process yet. I will. It's one of those things we've noted to do and we will do, but I have not started that process yet. Is that it? Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Jim, because they also contacted Jerry Green, who is the new city manager as of 3 days old, and Gerald Yackel, the chief of police, they contacted him, and apparently Don Hurd was threatening to the chief of police and said, you'd better be there. How was that? It was something to the effect, you'd better be there or something serious is going to happen.
Oh, so he told the chief of police, huh?
He told that to the That's chief true. Of police. And
that meeting, now this is a meeting of city councilmen and chief of police?
No, they wanted only the two council people, Chris and I, and the chief of police and the city manager. Well, the chief of police said, I'll have to check with the city manager, but I doubt that I'll come. The city manager didn't speak with Don Hurd, but he had his secretary call back and say that he had a previous engagement. Chris called back and said that she was not going to attend, that her husband wouldn't allow her to, and that anything she had to do would be in a public meeting, the same way that we brought the thing up in public meeting. I told him that I was not going to do anything unless I had my city attorney in the press there. And I told this, in fact, to Lon Lasher from the Headline Herald. I told him this just before the Monday council meeting, what had happened, that they'd singled the two of us out. And they did not want any of the other council people there. And at 3 minutes after 5, the call came in to the city manager, and it was from Stan Moreland. And he wanted to know why Jerry Green wasn't there and why we weren't there. And Jerry Green explained to him.
Who's Stan Moreland now?
The barn.
He owns the Barn Tavern, okay.
And he explained to them that he had advised Gerald Yackel not to go, that he's a supervisor, and he said, I don't want my staff involved on this level. And he said, I had told Don Hurd that I was not going to be able to attend because of a prior engagement. And he said, the women chose not to come because of personal concerns, and one of them was that they were concerned about the open meetings violations, and I can't remember what else, but, you know, basically said, no, we won't be there. However, and then he spoke to Don Hurd for a while and said, no, the letter that they sent was not against Senate Bill 573, which apparently they assumed it was. It was simply saying we had not endorsed Senate Bill 573 and that the mayor was acting as an individual and we did not have a lobbyist for Tillamook City endorsing Senate Bill 573. But they sure set up a stink as though we had really done something awful, and we hadn't. So he offered to set up a meeting with them. Now, this was on last Wednesday.
Yeah.
He offered to set up a special meeting with them, and they hemmed and hawed around and didn't want to do it. Well, he went down in person and talked to them at 5:30.
Who now is Don
Hurd? Jerry Green. He went down to talk to Don Hurd and some of the people that were attending that meeting.
Yeah.
He did go down and talk to them, and he...
What position does Jerry Green hold?
City manager.
Okay.
Brand new city manager. He was only there for 3 days.
Jerry Green, Tillamook City Manager. Okay. Yeah.
And blank. Anyway, he went down and he set up a meeting for the council.
Yeah.
And they had their special council meeting this Monday, and they came up and they brought their blackjack table and showed us how to play blackjack the way that Senate Bill 573 allows.
Yeah.
And we had issues, we had concerns that we brought up. One of them was from a man named Ed Davis.
Ed Davis, yeah.
Now, he is a lobbyist for the Oregon Sheriff's Association.
Yeah.
The District Attorneys, Oregon District Attorneys Association. Yeah. And I think the Oregon Chiefs of Police.
Yeah.
And he had, it was a letter that we had that was a copy of what was sent to the legislature. That was against Senate Bill 573, and we gave a copy of that to each of the council people because we had a copy of it.
Yeah.
And we asked some of the questions, but no one else would ever care to pursue them.
Yeah.
And council, we kept bringing things up and bringing things up, but because of the way it was said in the meeting, you had no choice but to endorse the Senate bill or to not vote against the Senate bill when they asked for endorsement by city council because of the way that the meeting went. The facts that were presented, you cannot come up and say, well, now you're telling me you're not going to have a house bank. Can you guarantee you're never going to have a house bank? You know, and they say, well, we're not supposed to have a house bank and that's how we're going to run it.
Yeah.
Well, you can only take them at their word.
Yeah.
You have to take them at their word, and when you make your decision, you have to take and make your decisions not on what your gut instinct is.
Yeah.
Not on things that you've heard, you know, on street
corners. In the city council, you don't have the option, as the United Nations organization does, to declare a veto. You don't have any veto power in Tillamook City Court.
Well,
Tillamook City Council.
Well, you have veto power, but I mean, what I'm saying is that when you vote up there on council, you can only vote really on the facts that are presented to you.
No way out of it then, but forward.
Yeah, so if you have a personal feeling about something, you have to dismiss your... find out information. That's how we found out anything at all about Senate Bill 573, was I was given a copy of it secondhand and went from there.
Yeah.
But
you a city councilman, learned about 573, the Senate bill that passed Oregon State social gaming in Oregon State in 1983. You, a city councilman, in the very city that had the first gambling issue of social gambling in the Pacific Northwest, the town that spawned the whole thing, learned about Senate Bill 573, sponsored by Tillamook City originally. And you, a councilman, found out about that Senate bill how? From your office? Secondhand, through your own research. The fellow council members of Tillamook, how many are there? How many council members in Tillamook?
Six.
And there's three of you and three of them? And those three council members?
Three of who?
You say there's six council members in Tillamook City.
Yeah.
There's Chris, you, and what's his name? And then there's the other three, so there's six of you. I see three of you, one half, the Tillamook City Council, was not even alerted of an endeavor made in the name of the City Council. Isn't that right?
I knew that there was legislation.
But I'm saying that half the City Council hasn't even been tuned in. The other half, three members of Tillamook City, perhaps the business community, have been pushing something here that isn't quite...
Well, all I know is that there are six members on council, and no one on that six-member council knew anything about Senate Bill 573. We knew that there had been legislation asked for, but we did not know about the Senate bill itself.
And you're involved in the city government, and they are involved in Oregon State statutory law. What relation is there? In the city government, why should city government be concerned with the knowledge of an Oregon State statutory law as Senate Bill 573?
Well, it affects the city, but you can't... The thing was that bothered me is that there's so many Senate bills going to and fro that affect cities and counties, you can't be up on every one of them. And I just assumed, maybe I assumed incorrectly, that our liaison was the mayor. And that's what I picked up on.
What's going on here? What's going on here? Senate Bill 573 was presented to the United States, the Oregon State Senate, and the Tillamook City Council and the mayor as their canopy had mailed a letter to the Oregon State Legislature endorsing 573. And you folks had not even had a hand in that. That's the current rage and controversy, isn't it?
It was that it appeared that way, but it was not. It was that the mayor had written That's part of the controversy. I'll say that. That's part of the
controversy.
What it was that the mayor wrote a letter that appeared
to represent the entirety.
To represent the council and was presented to the Senate Judiciary Committee by Don Hurd. And Don Hurd said, and it's on, it is on tape at the state.
Yeah.
For the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it says, I think this indicates where Tillamook City as a government is coming from.
Okay, that's good for that 573. That'll possibly pass the Senate floor. It's already cleared the House, and it remains for Governor Attia to sign that particular bill. Now, 753 relates to Oregon social gaming. And there is no restriction. And I believe myself that legalized gambling doesn't know any particular boundary. All it knows is a fatter payroll and expansion. Now, I'm really here for 1976 because I was here in 1976 and I saw Tillamook City Council originate social gaming in the Oregon coastal area. In the Pacific Northwest, actually. I believe Washington State had a few lotteries up there, you know, little pull tabs, I believe. I'm not even sure of that. Maybe Tillamook was the predecessor of everything. But I tell you, Tillamook City was the predecessor of all social gaming, legalized gambling, in Washington State, which is all now open to gambling. And as Oregon State will be all open to gambling when this bill passes. Tillamook City was the, there's a better word than germination. What's the term you use when a chicken egg is germinated? Incubation. Tillamook City is the incubation location of legalized gambling in the Pacific Northwest. Tillamook City in 1976. And it began with an 11 o'clock p.m. emergency meeting of the City Council in which just a small percentage of council members were notified to attend. They attended that late night meeting and they voted unanimously. And the City of Tillamook legalized by city charter in violation of Oregon statutory law to legalize city gambling within the limits, games of chance, as you could say lottery according to the FCC regulations, and broadcasting that's called lottery, but here we'd call it games of chance, we'd call it gambling or social gaming if you're a lightweight. But it was legal in Tillamook City for 6 years within the city limits, within a county, within Tillamook County it was unlawful. Because Tillamook County existed within Oregon State and it was in violation of Oregon State statutes. The Oregon State Police had the authority and the absolute, they'd sworn to enforce Oregon State statutory law, the Oregon State Troopers, but yet they never did touch it for 6 years. And look how it's growing from that incubation in 1976. Now we seem to have even a little exposure of a black hand, maybe a little Nevada interest suddenly might bear its head and realize that indeed they've got something going up there in Oregon now. Maybe we ought to head up there and bring old Harry of Haraz on up and get MGM Grand up here and we'll take a look at Tillamook Valley, Tillamook County. Maybe we can get something going there like they did in 1916 with Bay Ocean when a man came from the East Coast to Portland and heard about Tillamook County, the awesome beauty of the county. So he took a boat from Portland, or a wagon train, I forget which, to Tillamook City, from the which he built himself a boat to sail across Tillamook Bay to Bay Ocean, and he invested millions of $1910 dollars in Bay Ocean Complex, Bay Ocean City, that Pacific Ocean swallowed 2 years later. The man lost his vast fortunes and his dreams of an Atlantic City gambling casino on the West Coast was forever gone by the Pacific Ocean. That man went out one night and was never seen again. The valley has great potential for a profit-making business like casinos. Oregon Coast.
You might look into Newport.
Roulette wheels 5 years ago. It followed Tillamook. Coos Bay also followed Tillamook City. Likewise, Long Beach, I understand there's a condominium up there. I was hitchhiking through, and you meet some strange people when you're on foot, and they pick you up and put you in their car on their ground. They'll say things to you they might not say if you'd picked them up. But it took me roughly about four different pickups to get to Long Beach where I was going. And on the way there, two of those rides, my last two rides, was in the Willapa Bay region going into Long Beach. The two people that got me there both told me the same thing, that Talk had it that the Mafia had built a condominium and was going to bring in gambling into Long Beach. They built a condominium on the beach, and I got to Long Beach and I saw this building out there in the middle of a 16-mile sand spit. And I thought it was strange, and I wondered who has the power to establish a structure like that on public land, on public beach land, like Long Beach is, right out there in public domain. Who has the power and authority to purchase a thing like that, to declare it open for purchase, and to purchase it, and to get a building permit and build on a public piece of property? Who's got the authority to do that, I wondered. And I don't really digest that yet. I wouldn't call it mafia money. I would just say my definition of mafia money may be somebody with so much money that their money has corrupted them. I would call that mafia. Anybody, no matter what their nationality, whoever they are, if they've got so much money that they're rotten inside, I would call them mafia. Because that's, to me, the definition of mafia is an awful lot of money and a lot of power and a consuming greed. Italian?
No. It was almost like an unwritten organization.
Yeah.
But that there syndicates are ties.
Yeah, there's different Italian families. There's those in Italy, you know, that particular race and nationality, and the old Black Hand, the old execution squad, is still probably in Italy to this day, very definitely, from some television clips I've seen in the past. And there's probably I talked to a friend of mine this afternoon, and he was telling me that a friend of his went over to the East Coast with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend's uncle was an Italian named guy. And this guy gave her thousands of dollars worth of presents. And he said to this individual, Jody, he said, just give me a ring and I'll give you a job anytime you want it, he says to him. He owned a dry cleaning, he owned a laundromat, and yet he was driving around and wearing fancy clothes and spending thousands of dollars on gifts. And another guy that this friend of mine related to was involved in the Jimmy Hoffa disappearance in the East Coast. This mafia figure has a nephew here in Tillamook. And this guy here in Tillamook, this young man, spoke of his uncle over there in the East Coast with involved in that Hoffa case. And this guy here in Tillamook said that his uncle can just, with a word, have anybody killed he wants to.
Is that the Stega?
Could be. Something like that. Maybe it's not pronounced that way.
There was some time
mafia is mafia, and it doesn't matter what you call them. It's just a matter of what people do, you know. Some people do the wrong things, and you could call them Hispanics or Jews or mafioso, or you can call them Canucks, you know, if you want. And myself here, I don't know what you'd call me. Probably a kraut, half kraut, you know. The point is, people aren't intrinsically bad, you know, nor should name calling be used, but in different times and seasons, things get a little out of hand. Even, I suppose they could easily get out of hand in government, and it wouldn't be hard to see Oregon's intent, as Tom McCall had originally planned it, open beaches and all this kind of stuff. It wouldn't be hard to see that spun around in reverse, and instead of wide open beaches for the public and free birds, it wouldn't be hard to see MGM, Grand Hotel, and all these various casinos, and a bunch of whores, hookers, and pimps on the streets of the coast, Oregon coast, most beautiful. A little better than a hot, dry desert in the middle of Nevada. I wonder what Rajneesh is doing in Antelope. I wonder why I didn't come here. Pardon?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about the Rajneesh. They annoy the heck out of the land use planning.
He hasn't got the money to buy out city council, so he's not going to get much around here. Go ahead.
Now, I would just, if you're really wanting to investigate some things, you know, all I have are the facts that I gave you. And the facts, and they can, those are the facts that can be backed up. What I can't do and what I don't have are, you know, I have my own personal thoughts about things, but I can't really back them up.
Now, City Council of Tillamook had established gambling in Tillamook. Rockaway City attempted to establish gambling, but they were told by the City of Tillamook it was illegal. Isn't that right?
No. No. Tillamook voted in social gaming, and Rockaway also voted in social gaming, after Tillamook had written a city ordinance that was talking about licensing social gaming and so forth. Rockaway voted it in, and at that time, members of their council were apparently at the League of Oregon Cities, where they asked, can we write, I believe it was in the League of Oregon Cities, where they asked, can we write our ordinance the same way that Tillamook City has their ordinance written?
Yeah.
And they were told, no, Tillamook City is in violation. I don't know who told them.
Hmm.
And that's apparently what went hand in hand with our new chief of police, who said that it was in violation, and our city manager said it was in violation. And I don't know in what order those hit or anything. I just know that all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. And, you know, that's when they had their late night meetings, trying to weed through the thing.
Yeah. You know what
excuse me. A second. In Oregon, you can have, according to ordinance, you can vote in social gaming in your area. But if you read the social gaming thing, it's clearly designed that if the three of us need to sit down and play cards that we could for money. But it specifically talks about dealers, it specifically talks about players, and if you read it, the whole thing, you know, every time that you say, well, could I have a dealer? It specifically says, no, you can't. Can I have a house mix? Specifically, no, you can't. And I do not understand how Tillamook City, back in 1976 or 77, when that ordinance was written, I do not understand how it ever passed. I don't.
As I say, it was 11 o'clock p.m. meeting, because I am right there with my memory before you right now.
Because I was not involved then. I wasn't involved.
I was watching.
Because I was even under the same feeling that a lot of people, you know, save Yahtzee.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
I was thinking, I had my eyes on a lot more than that. I think we were all watching it.
David, you look like you're moving around and ready to leave me.
Well, I have to.
In 1975, social gaming was legalized in Tillamook. Former City Councilman Don Hurd has this to say about the 8-year period of legalization in Tillamook County.
Basically, during the 8 years that we've had social gaming in Tillamook City, we had no problem. I mean, there was no reported complaint to the police department. It increased tourism in our city and seemed to be beneficial for everyone. And it's during that period of time, it went through two challenges at the voters' booth, and each time passing with a greater percentage of voters.
One of the first legal establishments of social gaming in Oregon was in Tillamook City, where at that time Mayor Walt Ackley was in charge of the mayoral office. Here is Walt Ackley with a word considering social gaming in Oregon.
As far as we know it here in Tillamook, it has, as far as we're concerned, because we had certain rules and regulations we did have, but we had no problem as a community, as a place in which to have games. No, it was okay.
Mr. Hurd, former councilman of Tillamook City. Precisely when the gaming issue was brought down on the Tillamook citizens, It's our understanding there was an emergency session called of the Tillamook City Council, and it was rather a late night meeting, and not the entire council was represented at the introduction of gaming in Oregon. Do you have a comment on that, sir?
It wasn't actually an emergency meeting. It was an emergency ordinance, and inasmuch as we did have card rooms in Tillamook that basically played pitch and pinochle and...
At that time, sir.
And pitch and pinochle were legal. There was no problem with that. But if the state was going to strictly enforce social gaming laws and anti-gambling laws, then playing pitch for money was illegal.
At that time, was not in-house gambling illegal in the state of Oregon? Maybe, perhaps in violation of the state statute of Tillamook City Code, sir?
Playing pitch or pinochle was not in violation, but when they gambled money for that, it was both in violation of Tillamook's ordinance and state law.
Thank you, sir. This was Don Hurd of Tillamook City. This is Lou Dalspot for 75 KXL. This is Lou Dalspot for 75 KXL.